This is Terry Cassidy from Project Camelot, and we should be back on the air with Dr. John Hall. John, are you there?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, great. So I'm trying a technology here. I'm being told some people are letting me know that there's a lot of echo on my voice tonight, so I wanted to change a connection and see if we have a little less echo on my end. At any rate, what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about where you think this is going and how people can protect themselves.
Well, I think, as I said, my particular theory is that this eventually is going to be a mass population control technology. Really, the knowledge of it right now is probably one of your best protections, because invariably what happens with most of the victims is that you start getting attacked with directed energy or start hearing voices, and you start complaining of that to people and then get further victimized by the psychiatric community. So really knowing what it is and knowing what not to complain about is probably, as far as your livelihood, the best protection. The psychiatric community, to some extent, is probably in on the whole thing based on their past. It was psychiatrists that were at the forefront of most of the mind control experiments of MKUltra, and I would assume it is the same thing today. Now, that not does necessarily translate down to the ground level where your community or neighborhood psychiatrist that you may be sent to when you tell your boss you're under surveillance. They truly may just not have any knowledge of the technology. But usually even presenting it to them in the form of documents still doesn't do any good. If you're hearing something that they can't hear, then you're delusional until proven otherwise. So knowing what it is when you first start hearing it, so someone can convince you to see a psychiatrist, or a lot of people start thinking that it's, you know, completely spiritual when, you know, as I said, a lot of times, you know, if you have voices telling you to do stuff that you don't ordinarily want to do, and while you're being attacked and while you're being stalked, then look at harassment and instead of a spiritual cause. So knowledge is probably the best protection we have right now. The other good protection is altering your EEG. Most of this is done through remote neural monitoring is the catchphrase for it, or EEG recognition. That's how someone gets targeted. Everybody has a slightly different EEG. It gives off a slightly different ELF wave signature. So they can actually pick you out of a crowd of thousands based on your EEG. And what we've noticed through working with victims, that if you can alter your EEG, you know, it's hard to explain how to do that, but it's done kind of through a biofeedback type of mechanism. And the example I give to people is, I mentioned this in the book. If you're looking out into your backyard, and let's say you're looking at a swing set in the backyard, in your mind's eye, trick your mind into seeing a dinosaur or a big purple Barney. What they're picking up on with the remote neural monitoring is what your brain is sensing, not what the lens of your eye is actually seeing. It's not so physical that they're actually using the eye as a lens to see what you see or to smell what you smell or to hear what you hear. It's all being done at an EEG level. So if you make yourself see something that's not there, that's what they'll see. And that's, I guess, the best example I can give of how to alter the EEG.
I think that's very good. I've been reading some things that do talk about that notion. And another concept that I heard that I always thought was really brilliant was to visualize snow, that pure white, to white out your mind is a way of interfering with mind control efforts.
Oh, definitely. Either picturing bright white or pitch black. If you can picture complete darkness, then they don't see anything. And you're right, the bright white actually messes with the monitors that they're actually watching on. Because they're the monitors that they're actually looking at is still dependent on current technology. And as you know, computer screens don't like real bright colors, bright white specifically, and like I said, complete darkness. If you can imagine in your mind complete darkness, and you can do the same thing with auditory responses. Make yourself hear something that's, you know, that you're not really hearing. Project white noise while you're having a conversation with someone, and that takes some training. And that's one of the things we're looking at doing is actually getting this down to a trainable method where we can train people to do these, to use different parts of the mind simultaneously, which a lot of people have a hard time with until they're trained to do it. Because they can hear a conversation you're having with someone by picking up your auditory responses in the brain.
Okay, I'm in touch with somebody who's giving me some great ideas here. And this person has a background in this area. They are suggesting that another thing you can do is change your mode of discussion and think the way you think, like rapidly switching channels, so to speak, in your brain, thinking inconsistently, or also thinking irrationally, such as lettuce growing in concrete or something of that nature, something that doesn't match.
Exactly.
Can throw off. It's like the idea of throwing off a computer, it sounds to me like.
Exactly. If you look at it, if you picture them picking up your brain waves in a pure sine wave pattern, anything you can do to break that sine wave, to break the traditional pattern that they're used to targeting and used to sensing, will do it. And that's one of the ways to cover up conversation. If you're having a conversation that you want to make sure that they can't listen to, that's one of the ways you do it, is to train the mind to still focus on the person you're conversing with, have the conversation, but trick your mind into thinking that it's hearing extremely loud white noise. And what they'll hear is the white noise and not the conversation. It's all EEG based, and that's one of the things we need to work on, is different training methods to do that. And that's, you know, and it's, like I said, it's a hard thing to explain to someone that's never thought about breaking down the way the mind works. So.
Yeah. It's exciting that you're thinking along those lines, and that you're planning on possibly even teaching people to protect themselves in that way.
Now, another thing, a real easy fix for if people are having voice to skull technology used on them, what we found is that if you put an iPod, put ear plugs in your ears and use an iPod at a pretty moderate volume, you will override both the air conduction and the bone conduction of the hearing system. And that will oftentimes block out a lot of the voice to skull or the elf wave generated sound that is used for audio harassment. That's the voices around you. There's two distinct different ways people hear voices, and that is in the head, which is voice to skull, and voices in vibrations around them. And a lot of times people will say, well, I know they're tracking me from room to room in my house because I'll hear them talking to me through a ceiling fan in my bedroom, and then I'll hear them talking through my refrigerator compressor vibrating in the kitchen. Well, what that is elf wave generated sound. They basically cover your entire home with this broadcast or this transmission, but it needs a vibratory source, something that slightly moves air to finish amplifying it just enough for you to sense. And it seems like they're actually following you from room to room with it, but it's really just being amplified by whatever's vibrating or whatever's moving air in the room you may go to. And if you use an iPod, you can usually block out both of those with an iPod turned up. What they want you to do is focus, and focusing on listening to them brings it in clearer and clearer until, I know a lot of the victims will say, well, I'm trying to focus on what they're telling me to get clues or to get hints at who they are or what exactly they're doing. And the more you focus on it, the more inescapable it gets. The techniques that we're really working on are ways to ignore it. And that really pisses them off. You know, these people have created their own prison as well. They're sitting in a room, 12-hour shifts, behind a computer, watching you. The first couple of years, it may be a little bit fun. After a decade, it's a job like any other job. And if you learn to ignore them, that's one of the best ways of getting back at them, because they know they've created their own prison when they get into doing this kind of work.
Well, there's also, from what I understand, there's I don't know if it's just in the United States, but there's a certain frequency that things like fans and I don't even understand it, but maybe you know what I'm talking about, that go at a certain frequency, whereas in Europe they use a different frequency. It has to do with the electrical current or whatever it is. And apparently the one in America is not compatible with our natural physiology. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I have heard a little bit about that. I know your natural frequency is between 7.8 and 8. And that's another, actually it's funny you brought that up, because another way of actually scrambling what they pick up from your remote neural monitoring, there's a company called Tele Research Industries, if you don't mind me plugging somebody, because it's one of the few places I know where to get these. But
no problem.
They make a elf wave generator that generates a room full of elf waves at that frequency. It matches your normal EEG frequencies, or your natural rhythms, your natural frequencies. And that will, you'll still hear the voice to skull, but it interrupts what they're able to pick up remotely from you, especially if you have any loud music or a TV or anything else going on in the room. What they pick up will be piggybacked on all the superficial elf waves that are being created in the room by this device. So, I mean, it's another way just to mess with them back. I guess it's really not helping you not hear anything or helping you not be attacked by something, but at least you know you're kind of sticking it to the guys that are doing it to you by making them listen to a lot of the ambient sound in your house rather than just what's coming out of your head.
Yeah, and someone else is actually, I have people that are Skyping me during this. They may not be calling in, but they're actually sending me Skype messages. And one of the people is saying that, that there can be a signal, which is sort of a sleepiness that one's being put under, and that the minute you detect that, to do a countermeasure to that and understand that, that's sort of a certain detection, sudden tiredness or sleepiness.
Well, and most people that get that, the signal that at least they may be alluding to this is kind of a loud crack. That's what most people describe perceiving, and as just as they're falling asleep, and sometimes it'll bring them back out of a sleep, is they'll hear a pop in their head or a sound like two stones being clacked together. And sometimes it's loud enough that it will bring you back out of your sleep. But usually it's heard just as they're actually sedating you or making you more somnolent, which can be done with this technology as well.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'm wondering, are you familiar, do you know who Dr. Fred Bell is?
I've looked at his research, and I've heard some of his interviews, and it seems like he's very knowledgeable about this topic. And I've actually been meaning to try to get a hold of them, because one of the things that we've talked about through Freedom from Covert Surveillance and Harassment is creating a summit of getting all of us that are doing research into this and publishing things down different avenues, get us all in one room to try to come up with a plan on how to really get this into a congressional hearing. And another thing is to get some criteria for distinguishing between attack and true mental illness, because that's, from a medical point of view, there are mental illnesses that do cause you to hear voices and do cause delusions and hallucinations. And because this technology is meant to mimic those diseases or illnesses, sometimes it's hard to tell.
I'm sure it's getting really, really confusing. Although I have to, I sort of am beginning to think that there's no such thing as mental illness so much as people that have been targeted in more than one way. But that's because I'm also believing in, obviously ETs or beings from other realities and so on, and entities that are discarnate et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it gets really, really involved. And now humans are doing it to other humans, and so we've got big troubles, obviously.
Well, and I'll be the first to tell you, I have no love for psychiatry myself, mainly because it's so subjective. You know, when I put somebody to sleep, I check your lab values. There are criteria that I have to go by to dose you a certain dosage of an anesthetic or with a drug. You know, with psychiatry, you're basically telling somebody your story, and if it sounds reasonable and believable to them, you're okay. If it seems a little outlandish, you know, you're mentally ill. And, you know, and it's just, you know, it makes no sense.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. You know, and I studied this in college, and I just came away thinking, boy, you know, these are people out there, basically kind of playing God and determining what's normal. And actually we're beginning. Again, you know, the more you go into this rabbit hole, normal becomes, you know, almost an oxymoron.
Well, I even had one. Have a good friend who's a psychiatrist, and one of the few psychiatrists that I like. And he even told me, he said, "Well, when you really, you know, break it down, everybody's got something wrong with them. We all got something wrong with us, you know." So basically, you know, the mental illness is the norm, possibly. You know.
Yeah, that's true too. Now I'm getting some more information coming through to me here. I'm just going to run this by you. I'm hearing that. The U.S. is on a 60-cycle frequency that contains an imposed Lily wave frequency, and Lily wave was first observed artificially imposed on the U.S. electric system in the early 70s. It got its name from the shape of the lily flower on the oscilloscope. Does any of that make sense to you?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about that, but I haven't really dove into it. I'll be honest. I'm nobody's physicist.
Right.
I really was kind of more focused on the medical end of things and protection from that. But I know there are, you know, like in my book, I wrote based on what I've witnessed and what I've been able to talk to verifiable sources about this coming from satellite. But there are people who say some of this can be done through your home wiring. HARP is another. Agent that like Nick Begich, Angels Don't Play This Harp, in his book.
Absolutely. You know,
yeah, he talked about it being done with harp. And in reality, it may be a bunch of different modalities that are all being combined together to do all of this. But it's funny they brought up the electrical wiring things. I was just talking to a physicist not long ago who was, you know, we were talking about the possibility of using your home wiring to direct some frequencies from you, and it is possible, and if it's possible, it's being done.
Yeah, you know, I have to say that, and you know, our whistleblowers are saying not 10 years difference, but a lot greater, you know, maybe even thousands of years difference in terms of technology, and at least in terms of what we call the secret government. So I just want to throw that out there. So I am, you hearing, people are probably hearing these, you know, tones in the background, and these are people that are coming on, and I would like to encourage people to call in. The call-in number is on the front page, I believe, of our website, but it is also on the microeffect.com. So if you want to call in and ask questions of our guest, Dr. John Hall, you're welcome to do so in the next half hour, and we will periodically stop this discussion so that we can bring on other people to ask whatever questions are plaguing them about the subject. Is there a certain direction that you have been going, in other words, sort of to the exclusion of other directions? Because I'm noticing in even talking to you that this is such a complex subject that you actually have to sort of drill down in one way or another. And, for example, the uses of this technology militarily are, you know, mind-boggling and so on. And I am just wondering, are you concentrating on individuals in, like, so-called normal society, you know, the normal public as opposed to the specialized applications of this? Or are you leaving yourself open to deal with, you know, in other words, the military applications and so on?
Well, I'm trying to be pragmatic about it in the fact that, you know, they've spent a lot of money and a lot of years creating this technology. There are people out there that are calling for the total, you know, abandonment of this type of technology completely. Being a realist and knowing how the government works, that's not going to happen. What we're really hoping for is to at least have it contained back in the context with which it's supposed to be used by our guidelines. I met with Representative Jim Guest in person several months ago and was on his radio show with him four Sundays in a row. He's one of the few legislators that have actually come around to seeing that this is a real problem, and he's trying to pass legislation against it. And he asked me, he said, well, do you have a problem with this being used in the, you know, within the confines of the military overseas and, you know, on military targets? You know, well, the humanitarian side of you says, you know what, this shouldn't be used on anybody. But the realistic side, you know, you have to say, you know, I guess I don't have a problem with it being used within a slim context of military use. I do have a problem when it's being used to victimize a mortgage broker or a housewife or, you know, a doctor or, you know, someone that's here that's just trying to live their life. And, you know, like you said, you've got to kind of drill one direction. So really the direction we're trying to go with is to get a congressional hearing, get disclosure, hopefully find one or two people up there in Washington that are still, you know, honest enough and ethical enough to see this as a problem and get some disclosure and at least stop the experimentation that's being done here. So, you know, I guess that's the answer that I'd have to go with.
Are you having whistleblowers approach you, though, that are revealing more aspects to this question that we're talking about, some of which that you may not even be able to talk about?
Yeah, actually, I've talked to quite a few people in government positions that have voiced, you know, ethical concerns with some of the technology that have found themselves victimized by it. We've got people within Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance that have been intra-government whistleblowers that have had this happen. We've had people that are former MKUltra victims that are still being harassed by this as well. So, I mean, it's kind of disheartening when you see that people that are in the profession still working for the government that are trying to actually bring light to this, you know, can't even do it because the minute you mention it, you're almost instantly discredited. So, you know, and that's the way the technology works. But slowly, as more and more people come out, more and more people admit what's happening, in sheer numbers, we're hoping that we'll be able to find somebody in government that'll listen and have a congressional hearing. That's one of the reasons I want to get this summit together with those of us that are doing the research on it and publishing and being activists in the field, is to come up with a set of guidelines, some criteria, and a direction on how to get this done instead of, you know, Dr. Bell doing his research and his work and Dr. Begich, his work, me, my work. We're all riding down different venues when I think we need to all get on the same bus and find a direction that this needs to go to get something done about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Obviously, there's going to be strength in numbers, so I applaud your efforts there. Is there anything that you can talk to us about in terms of what other things are going on in regard to this technology? In other words, some of the things that may not have been covered in my questions here and things that you might want to tell people about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, after being on Coast to Coast, I noticed I had a lot of emails from people that were emailing me saying, you know what, I've got this and this going on, and do you think this might be harassment? Is this what you're talking about? You know, with this type of technology, it's not just hearing voices, and it's not just being burned with something that you can't see. There's a lot of things they can do, and sometimes it's real subtle. Electronic disturbances in the home, that's a big one that when you initially start having it done, you'll go, you know what, you know, my lights are coming off and on their own, or my power is being turned off and on, or I've got a battery-operated radio that comes off and on its own. I'll shut it off, and it comes right back on. Those are things that when you start seeing that happen, you know, if it happens real infrequently or happens once, maybe that's your wiring, maybe it's a short in something. If it's happening every day, a lot of times that's how the harassment starts, is through just electronic harassment, not of yourself, but of your electronic appliances. Be on the lookout for that. A lot of times before people start hearing voices or being attacked by anything, they'll notice break-ins, and break-ins where nothing is stolen. Your appliances may be taken apart and put back together wrong intentionally, so you notice it.
What about the use of a digital television? Because my understanding is that they're actually using the television now as a surveillance device.
I've read that too. And that is one of the reasons that, as you know, nationwide, they've been trying to get away from analog television and go to an all-digital system, and make you purchase a box to be able to convert the digital signal if you don't have a digital TV. Knowing what I know about the technology, let's put it this way, I don't have TV in my house. I listen to the radio and I read. So,
I have a TV that I have disconnected from the digital box completely. And when I took it in, I was actually flabbergasted by the size of the cables that went into the box. They were incredibly huge and thick. And I was just thinking, there's no way that the technology requires cables like this unless there's something else going on.
Well, exactly, Carrie, and there's actually been some studies on that and some very good articles written on using digital TV as a control weapon. And when you link that in context with what we're talking about, with GPSing your structures with the census, it all comes together.
Yeah, it's incredibly pervasive. All right, I'll be right back with everyone on the other side of this break.
The time is now. As the walls are closing in on America, Republic Magazine is a beacon of light guiding those that fight for freedom and the restoration of America. Republic Magazine is the ultimate activist tool. Republic Magazine digs in deep to expose the lies and offers real solutions from the experts. No other publication in America offers the real news like Republic Magazine. Get copies to give to friends, family, and neighbors, or simply order a subscription for yourself at republicmagazine.tv. Get informed and stay informed with Republic Magazine, the ultimate resource for your fight against the New World Order. Claim your free digital copy now or order a print subscription online at www.republicmagazine.tv. That's republicmagazine.tv. Or call them toll-free at 800-873-1620. That's 1-800-873-1620.
Jesse James, the famous outlaw, lived to be 103. Jesse James was elected a United States Senator for one term from Montana. Jesse James poisoned John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of President Abraham Lincoln, in 1903. Las Vegas is the county seat of Clark County, Nevada, and it is named after William Andrews Clark, the alias of Jesse James. Jesse James was involved in the creation of the Ku Klux Klan in 1867. Jesse James knew that the Civil War in America was fought over the issue of a central bank. Jesse James arranged the murder of General George Custer at the Little Bighorn River. This is Ralph Epperson, and if these claims are unknown to you, you have not watched my four-hour DVD entitled Jesse James Lived to Be 103. Visit my website at ralph-epperson.com for the details.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. FreezeDryGuy.com.
Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot, and we are back on the air with Dr. John Hall, and we're on the last half hour of the show. It's amazing how fast the show has gone. Apparently, we've got a caller. It looks like it's Kip in, Vermont, maybe? Are you on the air with us, Kip?
Oh, that's fantastic. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, thank you so much. This is Kip from Vermont. Please let me just first say wonderful blessings to Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan and the incredible work you're doing, and also a tremendous thanks to Dr. John Hall and his brave work. My question is two questions, if I may. One, past use for people who may have experimented with LSD or magic mushrooms or maybe even MDMA, known as ecstasy, whether past use or maybe the occasional current use would be make a person more susceptible to these effects, or if it could possibly strengthen the mind, if you had any thoughts on that or knowledge.
Well, I don't know if it would strengthen the mind. I know it chemically it doesn't make you a easier target, but usually just the use alone makes you a valuable target, because when you start voicing complaints of it, they're going to blame it on the drug. At least that's what we're seeing. Now, I know in the early MK Ultra studies, you know, they researched all of those for making the mind more subject to suggestion and hypnosis, and indeed they do. Anything that raises dopamine levels in the brain, which those do, will make you more susceptible to hypnotic suggestion, which some of this is remote hypnosis. So I guess not only would it make you more subject to control, but it's also going to make you very easily discredited if you ever start voicing the complaint.
Well, I would be very aware of that. I just had a nap the other day, and I was listening to some Native American music, and as I woke up from this nap, I just had this strange kind of thought come to me that said, gee, someone could be in my head right now, and I would have no idea.
Yeah, and that's the sad part of this technology is that if someone's trying to control you and not harass you, you won't hear a voice or anything that you consider foreign in your head. You'll just be controlled.
Wowee. Well, thank you so much, folks. I guess I really have any more questions, but keep up the good work, and I will continue to send my blessings of love and light to the whole Project Camelot team and all the whistleblowers.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Okay. Dr. Hall, you know, this is so amazing, the work you're doing. I have to say that it's very valuable to people. I think for decades there have been people that have been manipulated, and it's only gradually that these people are being able to come forward and not be ridiculed, and obviously your efforts in this direction are very valuable. We have some whistleblowers that are called super soldiers, one of which is Duncan O'Finian. I don't know if you happen to be familiar with him or have watched his video interview that we did.
I didn't watch the interview. I am familiar with him, and I believe he was actually scheduled to come on a conference call through Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance. I don't know if that is scheduled or if it's already been, but I know he's got some very valuable knowledge that that he was going to share with some of the people in the organization. And I've seen I actually saw him on the True TV thing, Conspiracy Theory, with Jesse Ventura, which, you know, I wish they would have had him on a little longer and let him talk a little bit more about what was going on than they did. But I understand that.
Now you are breaking up at the moment, so we are having some electronic interference, at least at my end, in your what you're saying. I don't know if you're breaking up for other people. I am being told by one of my contacts here that AI is all pervasive and very much self-aware, and that what we're talking about here actually goes beyond satellite surveillance. There is an artificial intelligence, according to one of our whistleblowers in the past and to one of my contacts at this time, who is saying that this surveillance of humans and humanity is they have put into place an artificial intelligence that is surveilling the planet as a whole and individuals, as you know, pervasively across the planet, and I don't know if you have you considered that.
Haven't really delved into that too much, but that it would sound like a reasonable thing to look into. And because they've been working on artificial intelligence for some time now, and like you said, the government research is light years ahead of what we really have access to, you know, on the ground in the private sector. So you know, that wouldn't surprise me in the least. And, you know, like I said, when I wrote my book, I'm going by what I was told by a friend that's currently with the CIA. He may not really understand what he's telling me either. I mean, it's one of those things where it's the chicken or the egg. I'm going by my experience and what I was told by people that are working with it in the field. But then again, who knows what they're being told? So, I mean, I'm always open to, you know, to new suggestions and what this can be, and it certainly could be artificial intelligence-based, that's for sure.
Right. It's really mind-boggling, the possibilities here. We've got another caller, Rob in, I don't know, maybe Wisconsin. Rob, are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Do we have a caller? Do we have a caller named Rob?
Yes, that's I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Rob. Yes,
hello.
We can.
Okay.
So go right ahead.
First of all, I really appreciate both of you and the work that you're both doing. I'm just, I can't thank you enough. I consider myself to be a fairly recent victim. I'm glad that haven't dealt with this for a decade, and I hope I don't have to deal with it for a decade more, because I will say that I'm not dealing with the voice to skull stuff, thankfully. I am dealing with the organized stalking and electronic harassment. And my suspicion has been like satellite based. I thought at first that I had some sort of a GPS in me, but it was like, how could that possibly happen? And when the whole remote neural monitoring aspect came into view with some of the poking around on the internet that I did, I was like, I mean, of course I was blown away because it's like a much more of a sci-fi reality than I would have ever imagined. But my curiosity about that is, how is it possible if you're in a household with multiple people, how they would initially, how would they single you out, or if they selected you or profiled you as part of this experimentation or weaponry, how would they zero in on you specifically so that others weren't actually being affected by it?
It's being done in two ways. One is by biofrequency signature, and the other is by EEG fingerprinting, and they kind of overlap. But your EEG, when you think, and the electricity goes through your brain, creating an EEG, it also gives off ELF waves. And everybody has a different ELF wave signature, and everybody has a different frequency signature. And that's one of the hardest things to get people to understand, is that when you first get victimized by this, everyone thinks, I've got to have a chip in me. That would be the only way they would home in on me. It was a homing beacon or a chip.
Yeah.
And that's older technology, and I have had patients that have had chips in them. James Walbert in Missouri, I read his MRIs. He has a Verichip-style chip that was buried in his trapezius muscle while he was in a drugged state or an unconscious state. But that's 10-year-old technology at the least. Most of it's being done now. No chip required because it's done with an EEG signature or a biofrequency signature.
I'm curious. Well, if you had, say, for example, you had five people standing in a line, and each of them obviously have a different brain signature, how would they actually be able to initially, if they were like, okay, we want this guy specifically, would it just be like, okay, they'd zero in on each one of those, and then by just monitoring each one, they'd finally be able to, oh, this is the one right here because he's thinking these thoughts, or, you know, how would they actually make the initial identification?
Well, since you're all exhibiting a different EEG pattern, usually, especially if you're having organized stalking, then you have some boots on the ground that know who you are already. So, I mean, basically, you were singled out by sight, and then your EEG was remotely sensed and placed in the system. And once it's read, then it's automatic. That part of it, the tracking is automatic. There's nobody sitting with a mouse actually tracking you as you go. That's all done automatically.
You know what's really interesting about this is when it began, it started out as a ringing in the ears, which basically it's a frequency that doesn't sound like it's in the ears, but it's like kind of between the ears. And I noticed immediately that, I mean, I started to, first it caused me to have extreme fear, a fear response. That's the other aspect to this that I've noticed, is there's this almost kind of manipulation of the emotional state that it can do. But what I did was, just by being kind of like an observer, I noticed that in different parts of the city, it was more intense. It was also affected by, you know, getting underneath a multi-layer space blanket, which I've used to kind of protect myself at times when it seems really bad, which helps. But I think I need to do more for as far as the shielding goes. But the point being that I noticed that it's affected by location and by different circumstances, and that it seems to have the capability. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. I noticed initially that when I would like move my body from one location to another, like walk real fast to a different location, that there would be like the sound would go away or it would dissipate slightly, and then I could hear the frequency increase in volume again, like the tracking had just, found me again. It's really bizarre.
No, so that is because some of the modalities, they have to aim at you, and some of them actually track along with you automatically. And especially with the directed energy weapons, you can move out of their way. That is somebody that's looking at a FLIR image or an X-ray image of you on a screen, and they're attacking you anatomically. And most of the time, you can move out of the direction of that attack. And it takes a while, especially if it's a microwave. Once it's been on you a while before it starts to hurt. When you move, the pain will go away. And logical thinking, you would think, well, then if I move, then it should transfer the pain to another side, whatever it's hitting when I move. but it still will take time to actually build up enough thermal reaction in the skin or wherever they're attacking you to hit. Now, the other part of it, the ELF wave-generated audio harassment, that is the one that seems like it's going wherever you go and tracking you, because that is put down in a broad spectrum. And that just needs something to vibrate around you to carry the sound. Now, that's not voice to skull. You're not hearing that in your head. You're hearing that which sounds like whispers around you, you know, in running water, in anything that vibrates. So some of the modalities are tracking automatically, and some of them have to be moved by hand along to you. So that's why you're seeing that. I know some of the victims I've talked to who just are totally convinced that they're chipped and it's being done by a neighbor with a handheld weapon, well, usually they become convinced how it is satellite once they take a big trip. You know, when they get on a plane, they fly to Florida from Wisconsin to Florida, and they're still being attacked just as much on the plane, and they're still being attacked just as much in another state. Well, then they
That was going to be my next question, was is it possible to move away and have this stop, you know, because that's obviously one of the big solutions that I've considered, even though it creates a huge disruption in my life. But
you'll move away from the stalking, but you won't move away from the electronic attack if they choose to follow you wherever you end up.
Well, I mean, thank you very much, Rob, for calling in. I do want to ask a question here.
Sure. Thank you for your time, guys.
Dr. Paul, I was wondering, because it occurs to me that one of the things that goes on with plants, I don't know if you've done any experimentation in this area, but, you know, healers know that you can go to a forest, a place where there's greenery, after you have been involved in, you know, electronics and trying to heal an individual or get rid of negative energy. And basically, the plants will take and dissipate that energy. And so it occurs to me that it's possible to sort of help people that are going through some of this to get into a meditative state and to do so in a place where there's a lot of greenery and a lot of nature, away from sort of city where there's a lot of, you know, electronics and so on, that it can be helpful to be around plants.
Well, Terry, I mean, you're a genius, because that is one of the things that we recommend to people. Is to get out anywhere, really. And you're right, being around heavy vegetation does seem to, if anything, if it's not absorbing some of it, it's getting your mind off of it. And that's really one of the best modes of defense, is just to get your mind off of it. If what they want you to do is lose your job and sit at home in your bedroom and just listen to them and just be attacked, if you actually get out and live your life and try to ignore it, eventually you will succeed and learn how to do that. That's one of the things we always recommend to people. Don't sit at home and just sit there listening to them 24 hours a day and being attacked. Most of the victims over time will notice if they're focused on a conversation with someone else or focused on doing something, performing some type of a task, they'll notice that they're ignoring the voices and they're ignoring the attack. It's the more deprivation you have, the easier it is for them to victimize you.
Absolutely. I would say that it is happening also. There's a different way of looking at this, which is that the veil between individuals is thinning. And this is maybe a little esoteric, but, In a movement into fourth dimension, where we are becoming a more telepathic society as a whole. In other words, people are starting to open up to their other senses beyond the normal five. And what happens there is that basically the boundaries between people are thinning and breaking down. And what has to happen is that people have to develop these strengths. And unfortunately, the technology is actually a challenge, if you can look at it like that, for the people that are under attack and are, you know, feeling that sort of pervading their lives, that basically they can develop these strengths, these muscles that normally they wouldn't be developing, that this is actually an opportunity. It's just a different way of looking at it.
That's a good way to look at it, because that is one of the things we're working on, is using the mind to combat it. I mean, as like Rob was talking about, he's, using shielding methods, and, a lot of people are using Mylar or copper mesh, and it just doesn't seem to work that well. It will lessen some of it. You know, some of the modalities, it will shield. Some of them, they won't. The ELF wave broadcasting, a lead-lined room won't shield, and nothing shields from ELF. And most of the remote neural monitoring is done on an ELF wave basis. And what we found is that whenever we figured this out from the remote reading experiments in the 60s and 70s, in people with the innate ability to remote read or project thought, that's the thought is, and the Russians were the first to click on this, is that it's being done through ELF wave transmission from the brain. Now, Putoff and Targ, in their studies, they kind of poo-poo the ELF wave hypothesis. The Russians say it's completely ELF wave generated, that the way a remote reader or a remote influencer can influence another person is done by ELF waves being generated from the mind. Well, whenever you open up an ELF wave channel, be it whether it's synthetic from a satellite down to a human being or from human to human, that's a two-way communication. Data transfer can go both directions. By controlling your thought, learning how to project your thought, you can actually put voices right back into the heads of your perpetrators using the same ELF wave channel that they've artificially created to you via satellite.
That's really excellent, and I'm glad you're bringing that up. There is I think of it as an occult technique, but it is a remote viewing and influencing technique as well to reverse the channel.
And we've actually done experimentation through the Mind Science Foundation doing that. Vasilev did a lot from Russia, did a lot of the early studies on, I won't call it remote viewing because that's just implying looking, but remote influencing, where we duplicated his experiments, or one of the researchers did in Mind Science Foundation, by taking just everyday people off the street, putting them in anechoic chambers, a shielded chamber that no other extraneous frequencies can get into, and put two volunteers in chambers, a kilometer apart, and then have one of the people project their thought to change the galvanic skin response, to change the way the skin carries a very, very slight electric current, and to change skin temperature response. And what was found is that we could exactly duplicate Vasilev's experiments, where even people without innate ability, picked off the street, can direct their thought and change the galvanic skin response and change the temperature response in another subject's skin at a distance using just ELF wave. And it's ELF wave when it's going anechoic chamber to anechoic chamber, because that's the only frequency that isn't blocked is ELF.
Okay, but I'm wondering, is this, when you call it an ELF wave, is this the same thing as signal non-locality?
I've never heard that term, but would be that ELF stands for extremely low frequency.
Huh. Because, this gets into sort of another sort of esoteric area, but our whistleblower, Dr. Pete Peterson, did a lot of work in the area of what he called the information field. And this is a very advanced area of research that has to do with, from what I understand, signal non-locality, and has to do with a field that is actually all around us, and that they are beginning to realize that we can affect things, in other words, basically anywhere, and not have to be in the physical proximity, but that it actually goes beyond sort of what you're talking about, from what I understand. In other words, it doesn't have to do with sending a wave. It has to do with something that's even more instantaneous than that. And believe me, I don't quite understand the physics behind it. I just kind of get the concept. Are you familiar at all with, have you heard of anything like this?
Sure. That's actually one of the basis of quantum physics. And actually, I think what you're alluding to is actually called the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen theorem, and that's that that no two unrelated events by space can occur simultaneously, meaning that that something you do in one place actually affects something across the Earth in another place, and that's one of the fundamentals of quantum physics.
Okay. Very good. Okay, so thank you so much, Dr. John Hall. We're out of time here, and, you know, I have no limits here, so I'm not able to push the envelope. I'd love to have you back on in a future date, and I really appreciate you coming on today.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Kira.
Okay, take care.
When I look out my window, there's so many sights to see. When I look in my window, yeah, there's so many people to be. It's strange.
Is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, popular speaker, and the author of 20 books, including the book Feminist Fantasies, that reveals the feminist influence on the media, on college campuses, and writing in children's classrooms. Now here's the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
Mrs. Kelly Davis, a parent in West Virginia, was dismayed when she saw her eighth grade daughter's childlike signature on a form the child brought home from school. The mother said, "It looks like a little kid's signature, not an eighth grade student." The daughter explained to her mother that she had not been required to write anything in cursive in years. Mrs. Davis then contacted the school, which is the largest school system in West Virginia. The superintendent of elementary education told Mrs. Davis that cursive writing is still taught at Kanawha County schools, but only in the third grade. Hours formerly spent practicing the loops and curves of cursive writing in what used to be called penmanship classes have given way to developing technology skills that teachers think are more necessary for the 21st century. Students are doing more and more of their work on computers in school, including writing. Beginning in 2011, 8th and 11th graders will compose the writing test portion of the National Assessment of Educational Progress on a computer. Another educator said that handwriting is increasingly something people only do to jot down notes for themselves. She suggested that students accustomed to using text messages, email, and word processors to communicate with others have difficulty seeing the value of spending hours practicing cursive writing. Their writing, their composing with these tools at home, and to have school look so different is not the best idea. Not everyone agrees that cursive writing is no longer a useful skill. Many believe cursive writing is a lifelong skill that is culturally valuable. Others point out that most schoolwork, from taking notes to writing essays, is still done by hand. Everybody talks about how sometime in the future every kid is going to have a keyboard, but that isn't really true.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Parents, it's important for the sake of your kids that you keep up with the latest trends in education. That's why we publish the Education Reporter. Write Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002 for your free copy. That's Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002. Or go online to eagleforum.org. And join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.